This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
We are privileged, a few years ago, the Chief Justice joined with you and your leadership to ask to present the state of the judiciary, which has been very important and a continued tradition to be able to express through his views what he sees as the chief administrator of our court system and meld not only with your branch of government, but ours in terms of the executive. We are the personification of the separation of powers brought to life, a people of goodwill, and a man of goodwill he is indeed. For those who are watching on TV who have never met the Chief Justice, you will tell by his speech he exudes a compassion and passion for service to others. In addition to being a justice in writing opinions, he has served as the Chief Justice the longest term of any Chief Justice in the nation. He has recently bestowed upon the state of South Dakota an incredible honor in being elected the president of the Conference of Chief Justices and chairs the National Center for State Courts. He is indeed recognized as a leader, not only in reforms that he has led along with our governor and with you, but also in fighting issues on behalf of what he has seen through the court system and individuals such as two of you that sit here who have sat on the bench and brought to us so that we may address those needs. I have lived in countries, and a number of you have, where there is no independent judiciary, where there isn't a rule of law, and it all comes down to individuals of integrity like you and our Chief Justice, and we're privileged to be served by and with him. Will the Sergeant-at-Arms please announce the arrival of the Chief Justice for his State of the Judiciary message.
Lieutenant Governor and members of the legislature, the Honorable Chief Justice of the South Dakota Supreme Court, David Gilbertson.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Good. Thank you. Good. Thank you. Thank you for that warm welcome. Governor Dugard, Lieutenant Governor Michaels, Speaker Wink, members of the legislature, constitutional officers, my fellow justices, judges, unified judicial system employees, and all citizens of the state of South Dakota. I suspect that there's an expectation when I present my annual message to you that you think it'll fall along predictable lines and topics. Admittedly, after 14 years of presenting these messages to you in an oral and a written manner, one might think there's no new issues to discuss. Yet when I reviewed the very first message I delivered to this body in 2003, there was not one subject that I talked about that day that will be covered in today's message. Clearly, times change, and the unified judicial system changes with them to provide necessary judicial services to the citizens of South Dakota. As Vince Lombardi once noted, perfection is not attainable. But if we chase perfection, we can catch excellence. In 1972, the then Chief Justice of the United States, Warren Burger, gave a speech to the American Bar Association. In it, he mused that if the legendary fictional figure Rip Van Winkle woke from his 20-year sleep and wandered into a courtroom, the only changes he would notice were that the ties had gotten whiter and the air conditioning worked better. Times do change, though. Sometimes they change a lot. There have been more changes in the unified judicial system in the past 12 months than in any one-year period since I became the Chief Justice in 2001. Major problems are rarely identified, addressed, and overcome within the span of a year. A long-term commitment is required. These programs do not result in a one-and-done. Reforms are often achieved by continuous improvement. In the front of the National Archives building in Washington, D.C., it magnificently proclaims on this wonderful building, "The past is prologue." When asked by a United States senator what that meant, a cab driver is reported to have said, "You ain't seen nothing yet." In 1975, the unified judicial system came into being with new circuit judges elected by the citizens of South Dakota. Since then, judges or justices at various times have left the system, and new ones have been elected by the people and appointed by the governor. Last year, the combination of judicial retirements and the 2014 judicial elections resulted in the largest turnover of circuit judges since 1975. In addition, this legislature authorized additional circuit judgeships in recognition of the increased caseloads in the Second Circuit and the Seventh Circuit. On January 15, 2015, at the Supreme Court, Justice Jeanine Kern replaced Justice John Konenkamp, who retired. Judicial administration also changed. New presiding judges now administer three of our seven judicial circuits. So, what does this all mean? Obviously, judges come and judges go. Of all the justices and judges who were within the UJS, when I became a judge in 1986, only one remains. Yet the system goes on. It is a better system than when I became a judge in 1986, and it's a better system than when it started in 1975, due to the hard work and the efforts of all those who held judicial positions during those intervening years. They set a fine example that the present and future holders of South Dakota's judicial offices must strive to build upon. I also want to recognize the efforts of all employees of the UJS, both past and present. At one point in the 19th century, Andrew Carnegie, the industrialist, was the richest and probably the most powerful man in the world. He later gave away most of his money to build libraries and other public buildings. But on his tombstone is an epitaph he personally wrote that applies to me as the Chief Justice. It says, "Here is a person who knew how to enlist the service of better people than himself." Our statewide network of drug and alcohol courts continues to grow and expand. We now have 12 alternative sentencing programs. 5 are DUI courts and 7 are drug courts. This past year, we obtained funding from this legislature to expand drug courts into Brown County and Beadle County and an alcohol court in Meade County. Today, they are up and running. The alternative sentencing program continues to enjoy steady growth. During the 3 years from fiscal 08 to fiscal 10, we had a total of 48 new clients. For the next three-year period, from 11 through 13, 129 new clients were accepted. In fiscal year 14 alone, there were 105 new clients, and in fiscal year 15, 170 new clients. We served a total of 293 clients in the fiscal year 15. Factoring in the number of unsuccessful completions in 1 year's time, 261 people were not in the penitentiary that would otherwise have been there. They are succeeding in overcoming the addiction that brought them into the criminal justice system. Depending on various factors, it costs about $25,000 a year for a person in the penitentiary. The cost of a year, a drug or alcohol program for a person, is about $9,000. The math favors the taxpayers. In addition, there have been 588 dependent children of program participants in the last 2 years. These 588 children have not been in the custody of the Department of Social Services at taxpayer expense of $10,000 per year per child. As the Book of Proverbs admonished thousands of years ago, Train up children in the way they should go, and when they are old, they will not depart from it. Through the vision of Governor Dugard, this legislature, and all who have worked on these types of programs since their inception in the Northern Black Hills, we are now approaching the point where all cities in South Dakota that are large enough to provide the necessary services for a drug or alcohol court have one or the other, or in some instances, both types of courts. There remains an opportunity to set up a drug and alcohol court program in the Brookings area. I am requesting that this legislature consider funding such a proposal. Where do we go from here with the drug and alcohol courts? Well, I see two additional opportunities to keep addicts out of the penitentiary and restructure their lives so that they become useful citizens who pay taxes and support their families. First, I would like to see both alcohol and drug courts offered in each location where there is one or the other. You treat an alcoholic differently than you treat a drug addict. So, like a railroad, twin rails for a track are necessary. A circuit judge who has been active in these programs for years defined the difference between drug addicts and alcoholics this way. She said, "Alcoholics, though they are addicted to alcohol, generally they maintain a home and some form of employment. Drug addicts are couch potatoes. They generally have no job, no home, nothing more than the clothes on their backs. Thus, a key component in getting drug addicts into a drug court program is finding them a place to live and a job. Second, I would like to see the existing programs expanded to accommodate more participants. A lack of personnel is not the main factor holding us back from expansion. Rather, it is mainly a lack of dollars for additional treatment by trained professional counselors. We currently have a capacity of 290 people in our statewide programs. If we were to fund the Brookings program, that capacity would increase to 310. From there, if we were to add just one court service officer in Minnehaha County, which we are requesting, and expanding the use of additional personnel with increased treatment dollars, we could in 1 year potentially increase our capacity from 290 to 445. That is more than are currently housed in the women's penitentiary. The total cost of this increased treatment program would be about an additional $590,000, a small fraction of the cost of constructing a new prison and staffing it 24/7. These alternative sentencing programs are not easy. Every program graduate I've ever talked to said it would have been easier to go to the penitentiary, do the time, and leave, still an addict. It is a proud day for each individual when he or she graduates from the program and can move on to a productive life. The value of the program became evident when Governor Dugard announced yesterday that the state was able to avoid the construction of a new women's prison, which would now be ongoing, and the potential construction of a new men's prison in the near future. Several years ago, a friend gave me a judicial gavel. It's an unusual one, though, because it's got a claw hammer on it. It is not the cylindrical head that you're used to seeing. And he did so because he said judges should use their authority to build things. He said such a gavel like this could be used by judges in alternative sentencing programs to build lives, not additional prisons. Drug and alcohol courts take people who are not high risk to the public and provide them with the tools to reduce the risk both to themselves and the community. However, we do not bring individuals into our drug and alcohol courts with a guarantee of success. Addiction is a lifelong, relapsing, chronic disease that can only be treated, not cured. What we accomplish is to give individuals the opportunity to achieve success. In the end, the burden falls on that individual. With the leverage of the criminal justice system and the partnership of treatment, he or she can succeed or fail with corresponding consequences. Simple 15-minute lectures do not work. Intensive 24-month rehabilitative programs do work. As Benjamin Franklin once observed, "Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn." Sometimes I fall into the trap of viewing programs like drug and alcohol courts solely by the numbers. A message I received shortly before the first of the year really brings the programs back to me in human terms. It was a message from a circuit judge in Rapid City who presides over an alcohol court. This is what she said. I want to share with you the story about the impact of our alternative courts. One of our participants passed away on Sunday. He had been sober for a year, got his life together with a significant other of 26 years who had stood by him during his prison stints, his heavy drinking days, and ultimately his entrance into our program and sobriety. He had taken advantage of every opportunity we gave him. He was working full-time, had established a budget, and had actually gotten some of his debt with the credit collectors and judgments. About 6 weeks ago, he began complaining of severe pains in his stomach. After many appointments in Rapid City, he was finally referred to Avira in Sioux Falls. The DUI court was able to pay for his transportation to Sioux Falls, and he was able to stay with his daughter in Madison, who he had just rediscovered a relationship with. He went to his appointment on Tuesday, December 15th. He was immediately admitted as his liver was full of cancer. At that time, upon his admittance, they didn't expect him to live through the week. They essentially told him he would never leave the hospital. Two court service officers and I loaded up and drove to Sioux Falls on December 18th to pay our respects to him and his family. We took his DUI court medals with us as he had completed Phase 3. When we entered the room, he cried, held our hands, and gasped when we presented him the medals. They were with him when he died. He thanked us, cried a lot, and lamented he was not ready to die, as he had found happiness in his life again. He told us he was proud to die sober. Drug and alcohol addiction is not the exclusive domain of our urban areas. In June 2015, Attorney General Jackley reported that the amount of meth seized in rural areas in South Dakota more than doubled. Eight rural counties saw a meth arrest for the first time. In Buffalo County, one of South Dakota's most rural counties, Sheriff Wayne Willman reports meth is continuing to be a greater and a greater problem. The Unified Judicial System started a local program called HOPE to combat drug and alcohol addiction in rural areas. The pilot project was in Walworth County. It worked so well that we started additional programs in Tripp, Charles, Mix, and Brown counties. The HOPE program requires random drug testing or alcohol testing of participants. It also involves intense supervision by specially trained UJS court service officers. It is not a modified drug or alcohol court program. Rather, it's a form of intensive probation. In a pilot project, we are starting a HOPE program in Aberdeen that already has a drug court and an alcohol court. Since the HOPE program does not include the intensive professional counseling and other components of a drug court, it is less expensive per client. We are going to see if those who are not as addicted to alcohol or drugs but are still involved with the legal system can benefit from a HOPE program and save the openings in the drug and alcohol court programs for those who more severely suffer from the disease of addiction. I hope to report to you next year on how this experiment works. The Fifth Judicial Circuit is also expanding its HOPE program in another way. Presiding Judge Scott Myron plans to have a HOPE program in every county of that circuit by the end of 2016. Judge Robert Timm retired this year after a distinguished judicial career. He left us a farewell present. He organized and started the first Veterans Court in South Dakota. That program is running in the Watertown area and has six participants. We are on the verge of expanding the program to the Sioux Falls area. We stand ready to expand this fine program into other areas of the state when funding is available. By the fall of 2015, it became apparent that South Dakota's criminal justice system could not keep up with how it handles those who have been arrested and who may have a mental health issue. The problem was of recent origin, As the 2013 fiscal year, there were 48 competency evaluations needed statewide. Just 2 years later, that number had essentially tripled. At that point, it appeared to me that the system could no longer effectively function in the face of that kind of demand. Mental health is a complex issue, and when it is a component of a court system, it becomes even more complex. And it has also become a strong financial burden on the counties. With this in mind, in November, I called for a statewide task force to study the issue and, more importantly, how to improve how we deal with it. I was very pleased to get the immediate and strong support of the governor. Moreover, many highly qualified South Dakotans either volunteered or indicated an interest in the area. The governor and I have assembled a task force of 22 individuals to study the problem and propose solutions. These individuals represent important components of South Dakota's criminal justice system and our state's mental health community. The goal is threefold. One, to improve public safety and treat people with mental illness in South Dakota's criminal justice system. Two, to more effectively identify mental illness in people coming into our criminal justice system. And three, to better allocate limited local resources in order to improve early intervention services and preserve limited jail and prison resources for the violent and chronic and career criminals. When one looks at a map of South Dakota, the counties form a bit of a checkerboard. However, a map is just printed symbols and words on a piece of paper. In reality, counties are very unique in many respects that impact their citizens' lives. As a checkerboard has 64 squares, we have 64 counties with courthouses. The access to legal services on our checkerboard of counties should not be dependent on whether the legal services are available in one colored county square with a large population or unavailable in another colored county square with a small population. On the checkerboard, all the squares are the same. Access to legal services, no matter the county, should also be the same. The Rural Attorney Recruitment Program continues to be an outstanding success. It is a program that encourages attorneys to locate in rural counties with a population of fewer than 10,000 people. This program provides financial incentive over a five-year period to offset the costs of setting up a rural law practice. The original allotment authorized by this legislature was 16 slots. We were given 5 years to fill those slots. Since we were the first state in the nation to try this program, there was no assurance it would work. However, the program is so popular that in about half that time, we are very close to locating 16 attorneys in rural counties. This is a good problem to have. We currently have contracts with 15 counties: Douglas, Hand, Perkins, Hawken, Lyman, Marshall, McPherson, Spink, Bennett, Tripp, Harding, Minor, Charles Mix, and Grant counties. With these successful results, the program has received positive national recognition. This year, the legislature allowed us to shift funds to set up a second group of 16 slots. Because there are 48 counties eligible for the program, we are excited to move the program into its second phase. I recently hosted a seminar for attorneys who are already practicing law in the program and law students and attorneys who are interested in the program. The attorneys who are already participating reported that they are doing very well. One attorney had already argued a case before the South Dakota Supreme Court. Another reported he was swamped with clients who needed his legal services. One attendee observed, "If you practice law in an urban firm, you live on their terms. If you practice law in a rural setting, you live on your terms." Each county that participates in the program or has shown an interest in participating has individual needs. Clearly, this is not a case of one size fits all. As Speaker Tip O'Neill once quipped, all politics is local. We work individually with each county to try to match an attorney to the needs of that rural county. South Dakota is both blessed by its experienced human capital and challenged by the unique concerns of a rapidly growing older population. The United States Census Bureau currently estimates that 14.4% of South Dakotans are over the age of 65, compared to the national average of 12.8%. By 2020, the prediction is that South Dakota's percentage of seniors will actually rise to 16.4%. The Department of Social Services says that by 2025, there will be over 200,000 South Dakotans over the age of 65, and the number of disabled elders will reach 85,000. These figures are impressive figures. However, more impressive are the people that make them up. Those of us who were privileged to witness the ceremony honoring the Korean War vets yesterday were given a moving reminder that those who make up these seniors' figures, who they are, what they sacrificed, and what they accomplished. Elder abuse can be generally divided into physical abuse, emotional abuse, and financial abuse. According to the United States Department of Justice, only one in 23 cases of elder abuse is reported to a reporting agency. A particular concern to me is that while we have laws to protect seniors from physical abuse and financial abuse, we have no explicit mental anguish or mental health components in our abuse and neglect statutes. While the risk of emotional abuse may not be all that great from non-family members, keep in mind that sadly, 90% of elder abuse is perpetrated by family members. Given the fact that 38 states do address the issue of emotional abuse by statutory protection, it certainly merits our attention. All of our surrounding states currently protect their seniors against emotional abuse. In my message to you last year, I reported my concerns over physical, emotional, and financial abuse of the elderly in South Dakota. I was delighted that my public concerns became the catalyst, for a law this legislature passed to set up a task force to study the issue. This task force had an organizational meeting in July and worked throughout the remainder of the year. It was comprised of a group of outstanding South Dakota citizens who possess great knowledge in the areas under study. Justice Stephen Zinner of the South Dakota Supreme Court ably chaired the task force and successfully guided it to a report that is now done and available for your review. And the UJS also staffed it and funded it. As I said, we now have the report available. It has 16 subjects that are recommended for consideration, and some of these subjects will be presented to this legislature for consideration in the form of a Chief Justice bill. A few of the highlights of the recommendations are incorporating emotional and psychological abuse into our criminal abuse and neglect statutes, recognizing the predominantly domestic or family nature of elder abuse, creating a civil right of action for elder abuse similar to our existing domestic protection laws, employing a new prosecutor in the Office of Attorney General to specialize in prosecuting financial exploitation of elders in South Dakota, creating a civil right of action against financial exploiters, and requiring background checks for proposed guardians and conservators, and generally prohibiting felons from serving in those positions. While this will not cure all aspects of the problem, it will make it more difficult to prey on a vulnerable senior. As my father-in-law recently told me, getting old is not for the timid. Since those elders needing protection cannot be here today, on their behalf, I wish to thank this legislature for giving its time and attention to this most important work. Last year, this legislature passed a comprehensive act which overhauled the then existing juvenile system. The stakes were high. South Dakota had the second largest per capita commitment rate of juveniles of any state in the nation. At the local level, all too many judges were faced with two options: inadequate supervision through probation or sentencing to a costly Department of Corrections group home outside the juvenile's locale. The law you passed seeks to divert funds from outside placements to local treatment options for the juvenile and, for the first time, the juvenile's family. As author Alex Haley, who wrote Roots, observed, in every conceivable manner, the family is a link to our past and the bridge to our future. The overall goal is the same as it was with adult corrections overhauls of a few years ago, to uphold youthful offenders more accountable, improve public safety, and save taxpayers money in the process. Portions of the law went into effect July 1st of 2015, and the other portions went into effect a few days ago, January 1st. Thus, by a matter of days, the program is now operational. It is too soon to draw any comprehensive conclusions about how it is working, but next year I hope to be able to give you a more extensive report. Probation services continue to be one of the most active and effective programs within the unified judicial system. Probation numbers continue to rise each year. Probation keeps our penitentiary numbers from continuing to soar and reduces the need to construct additional penitentiaries and state institutions. Dedicated court service officers quietly work day in and day out to supervise citizens who have broken our criminal or juvenile laws, but who can be rehabilitated within their community. For the price of a large Coke or an upgraded cup of coffee, we are able to supervise a person for a day on probation. At one point during the year fiscal 15, we had 7,839 adults on felony probation. That was an increase of 700 over just the year before. Deducting those who successfully completed probation or who violated probation and were sent to the penitentiary, we still had 5,918 people on probation at the end of the fiscal year. It was an all-time high for both sets of figures. The Public Safety Improvement Act seeks to lessen the number of felons sent to the prison for nonviolent felonies. However, they have to go somewhere. That somewhere is often adult probation with the UJS, and this results in some of the increase. The Act, however, also provides earned discharge credits for good behavior to reduce the length of probation. The UJS awarded earned discharge credits to over 2,200 probationers last year. That credit can effectively cut an offender's supervision time in half if he or she demonstrates consistent good behavior and compliance with conditions of probation. Last July, state and federal representatives from North and South Dakota met in Fort Yates, North Dakota, with officials of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. The goal was to enter an agreement to work collaboratively to develop and implement North American, culturally funded, and evidence-based strategies to support tribal members returning to the Standing Rock Reservation as part of probation or parole supervision following sentencing or incarceration. The goal of participating governmental entities is to enhance public safety on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation by reducing recidivism through successful community reintegration and coordination supervision of other offenders. The governor yesterday reported to us on a similar successful program with the Sisseton Wapanoate. These are significant steps moving forward to create a collaborative approach to allow offenders to return home and receive the supervision and services necessary for successful reentry into a home community on the reservation. The UJS is hopeful that this approach will serve as a model for how our probation program can work with other governmental entities to address complex multi-jurisdictional issues. The American civil legal system has been criticized for being too slow and too expensive. That concern exists in South Dakota. While major litigation obviously requires a lot of preparation prior to trial, there is no reason relatively simple legal disputes should suffer the same fate. With that in mind, the South Dakota Supreme Court enacted a rule which expedites civil actions where the damages claimed are under $75,000. There is limited discovery using depositions and interrogatories. Each side is allowed 2 days for trial. In keeping with the overall goal of a fair trial, the right to a trial by jury and appeal to the South Dakota Supreme Court are preserved. This program has worked well in other states, including our neighboring state of Iowa. The rule went into effect January 1st. The Supreme Court is confident it will succeed in providing a less expensive and prompt way to resolve civil disputes over damages. Our challenges are substantial, but hardly insurmountable. The actress Audrey Hepburn once observed, "Nothing is impossible. The word itself says, I'm possible." Or, as Napoleon bluntly observed, "Impossible is a word to be found only in the dictionary of fools." Nevertheless, we sometimes treat South Dakota's system of justice as if it was indestructible. It has admittedly withstood some fierce onslaughts, such as jail for judges in 2006. In reality, it is not indestructible. It needs our constant attention and concern. Our judicial system rests under our state motto, "Under God, the people rule," on fundamental fairness and on principles of equal protection and due process. Those principles, however, are often framed by the perception of the beholder. That perception, more often than not, stands from the individual's trust and confidence in our court system. That trust and confidence must be preserved. Thank you.